seen that word before, please, Shiva? In the Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, ninth chapter, text number, it's a famous verse. Visham Mahade Purushada Darshana. Maharasa Krishatarata. He saved us in the poison cave, from the fire in the forest, and the dangers headed by the generals of Ashwatthama. Krishata Maharasa. You know if you've heard that verse before.
Translation, I heard it sounds good.
Vishnu Mahadani Purushad. Well, we're up to the third canto. We should know all the other verses. That's in the first canto.
Sorry, I don't
know. You've read at least twice. Besides, for two or three times, the first canto. Aha. So here, Krishna means danger. And Amoshayat, we've seen that before. That's in the fifth canto, it's a little bit advanced. Gurarana says Syad, Swajanamana says Syad. You heard that before? Namotya yaksum peyti mrityum. I want you to never become a father or mother, a worshipful deity, a demigod or elder. He can't deliver his dependence from the ocean of birth and death. So here was Amoshya, delivered. And wherever we've seen the word, of course, charan is easy. Jasha. Jasha. You've seen that word before? Those were the students of the Bhakti Shastri text. The Bhakti Shastri book. Pavana Pavatamasmi. Rama Shastri Vitamaha. Jashanam Makaras Chadmi. Shotasam Ravi Amsami. So Josha, of all the, what is the shark? Of all the what is the shark?
Fish.
Of all the fish, yes. So Josha. That's difficult.
Of all the fishes, it's right.
Of all the birds. Here, so Jasha means fish. So why did Prabhupada translate it as an alligator?
Well, it's aquatic, right?
What's that? Jasha means fish. Grasta. Because he wasn't attacked by any old fish, he was attacked by an alligator. I'm sure in other parts of the story it's mentioned. But here the word Jasha is used, the fish attacking. For the translation, the personality of Godhead delivered the king of the elephants, was attacked by an alligator, and who meditated upon the lotus feet of the Lord. At that time, the female elephants who accompanied him were crying, and the Lord saved them from the impending danger. Purport. The example of the elephant in danger who was saved by the Supreme Lord is especially cited here, because even if one is an elephant, he can approach the personality of Godhead in devotional service. Whereas even a demigod cannot approach the Supreme Person unless he is a devotee. To the next text also. Tam sukaradyam rilubir anamya sharanar ribir kritadhyaya kona seveta duradaradyam asadubi. What ungrateful soul is there who would not render his loving service to such a great master as the personality of Godhead? The Lord can be easily pleased by spotless devotees who resort exclusively to him for protection, although the unrighteous man finds it difficult with the pitiya. Purport. Every living entity, especially persons in the human race, must feel grateful for the benedictions offered by the grace of the Supreme Lord. Anyone, therefore, with a simple heart of gratefulness must be Krishna conscious and offer devotional service to the Lord. Those who are actually thieves and rogues do not recognize or acknowledge the benedictions offered to them by the Supreme Lord, and they cannot render Him devotional service. Ungrateful persons are those who do not understand how much benefit they are deriving by the arrangement of the Lord. They enjoy the sunshine and moonshine, and they get water free of charge. Yet they do not feel grateful, but simply go on enjoying these gifts of the Lord. Therefore they must be called thieves and rogues. And what verse in Bhagavad Gita are they called thieves? Getting there. It's close. Yeah. It begins with Devam Bhavayata Deyanate Deva Bhavayan Duva Parashparam Bhavayan Dakshe Paramavasita. In charge of the various necessities of life, the demigods supply all necessities of life for man. But he enjoys these benedictions or these gifts without offering them to the Supreme Lord in return. It's certainly a thief. Ishtan bhogan hivo deva dasyante jagabhavitaha tarataka apradaya yo yopumte stena. Stena means steep. Yogunte sten eva saha. So he is certainly a thief. So how many thieves are there in the material world? One time, Alexander the Great, he was conquering the world, and his men brought before him one thief. And the Alexander said, "You're a thief, we'll have to condemn you to death." So the thief said, "Wait a second. How can you condemn me to death?" He said, "I'm a little thief. I'm stealing things here and there. But you're going around stealing countries. So you're a big thief. So why should a big thief condemn a little thief?" So Alexander the Great, he thought about it and said, "He's right. I'm a thief. Just going around stealing countries." So he let the thief go and he gave up conquering countries. And of course he died on his way back to his country. So everyone, he was a thief, and practically everyone else is a thief. As we heard the story, that a group of thieves, they went to their, after robbing a bank, they went to their hideout, and the head thief stood up and said, "My dear fellow thieves, you've done a great job stealing all this money, all the glory is to the thieves. But now that you've stolen all this money, I have only one request to all of you, please. Please, let us divide this money up honestly." That is basically the mentality of the material world. They don't recognize Krishna. They tell you to swarthakatim, he Vishnu. They eliminate Krishna from the equation, and therefore they believe, in some way or another, they're the actual proprietors. They divide up the land, and where people are actually thinking they're part of Belgium. And someone else is thinking, "I'm part of the Netherlands." And once in a while they get together and they form the European community. So the European community means that individually as thieves we're not so successful, but maybe collectively as thieves we'll be more successful. But Krishna Vahir Muga Boga Vanchatare Mayasta Nikatasta Jagatiyadare. That as soon as one turns his face away from Krishna, then Maya, who's standing right by, she slaps the person down. In other words, no matter how much one makes arrangements in the material world without recognizing Krishna, how many elaborate arrangements they try to make. Puladmara says, "Nityarana Krishna, paratakshito va mito vipadyeta griha vratana adanta govir vishitam tamizram punat punas charasacharvanana." They don't know about Krishna. They don't think about Krishna. Here the crocodile, Vyayanantam, who is thinking about Krishna, Charanam Bhujam, the lotus feet of Krishna. But they don't take shelter of Krishna. Instead, they have confidence that taking shelter of the United Nations, the League of Nations, this committee, that will solve their problem. When Prabhupada applied to a grant from the Ford Foundation, they sent him back a letter saying, we don't give donations to religious groups because they think that we're some sentimental religion. Instead, they'll give millions of dollars, billions of dollars for all kinds of other organizations which are ultimately don't solve the problems of life. But because they don't know what the problems of life are, or they don't recognize what the problems of life are, namely old age, disease, and death, therefore they're not very much interested in solving those problems. Because basically speaking, they have no faith that these problems can be solved. They have no knowledge, they have no understanding of the soul. Nor do they have any understanding that the soul can be liberated from matter. They think that we are the body, and even if we're not the body, then it doesn't really matter. All you do is have to do something pious, and then God will be obliged to bring you back to the spiritual kingdom, whatever that's like. But they have no idea what that's like either. Matter of fact, there's hardly any understanding, and there's hardly any appreciation of God. They think God, we can appreciate Him if He gives us the Cadillac that we're praying for. Otherwise, why should we appreciate God? People become so dull that when they look at the sky and they see the sun floating in its orbit, they have been trained by the scientists to just think, oh, why should I have any appreciation? It's just by accident. And that the only benefit the sun really has is that I can go to the beach once a year for 2 weeks and get a suntan, lying, just get some rays of the sun. Otherwise, who cares for the sun? Who cares? There is no one who put it there. It was all just a wonderful accident. And the air we're breathing is just by accident. They see everything as an accident. The food we eat is by accident. The water is by accident. Everything is just an accident. And we have to make elaborate plans to how to figure out how to exploit this accident. So that everything here is by accident except for their fertile brains, as Prabhupada would say, who's trying to figure out how to make plans to exploit the accident. But because it's not an accident, they simply become entangled in the karmic reaction. Evam pravartitam chakram nanu varti vitihaya agayor indriyaramo mokam partha sujivati. That a person who doesn't follow the system of sacrifice prescribed in the Vedas certainly leads a life of sin, for a person delighting only in the senses lives in vain. So there's a system set up by Krishna by which one will not get entangled in the reactions for one's activities. The reactions of the activities come basically because we don't recognize God. Instead of having some appreciation for God, we have another mentality of exploitation. And we think that mentality is real, and appreciation for God is some kind of sentiment. But God is not a sentimental idea. Even a person with a normal intelligence will be able to recognize that when there's a very elaborate arrangement, there's a very elaborate arrangement. And there's no other logical explanation for the universe. No one can logically say that, no, why should we assume an intelligent arranger? So then the question, of course, is, why do we assume that someone created this building? Because it's our practical experience that when you have a building, although we may not know who the arranger was, because we may know because we
We do tours here. Does anyone know who built this building?
The Khans. I mean, the proprietors.
Who?
The Khans of Hamal. The Khans.
Well, he gave the order, but who built the building? What's that? They came back again to fix it up. Someone built the building. We don't even know who built the building here. Yeah, we don't assume by the count. The count just had it accidentally made. That we know someone had made. Similarly, if we see a much more elaborate arrangement, even this body, in one cell of the body, they say, one cell amongst the trillions of cells is more complicated than the city of New York. Of course, the city of New York is a mess, but still, people made it a mess. I heard it got better, though. They reorganized it. But not by accident, some intelligent persons had to reorganize it. But the cell is very elaborate with all the different departments in the cell. They have a garbage department, they have an energy department, they have a filtration department, they have so many different departments in one little cell, and there's trillions of cells. So the scientists, they can't even create one cell. It's too complicated for them. So how can they say that everything else is coming about by accident? They can't even create one cell. With all their brains, all their attempts to make things organized, the limit of their intelligence, they can't create one accident, what they call an accident. So that means an accident, whoever accident is much more intelligent than they are. But as I mentioned before, if you go on the street, and there is two, what we call accident, two cars collide with each other, and the police come, they want a report, they ask the witnesses what happened. So if they say it was an accident. The police say, no, what happened? Who caused the accident? They want to know who caused the accident. So even they assume that accidents are the causes. So who caused the accident? So they're investigating, and they come up with nothing caused the accident. The Big Bang caused the accident. But who caused the Big Bang? That we can't say. So that means you don't know, because you can't say you don't know. But if you assume that the Big Bang created everything, then why should you assume it if you're a scientist? Then make another Big Bang and create something smaller. Make a little bang and create something small. Otherwise, why would you assume that a Big Bang created a lot, so many organized things, and we can't even create a little bang to create little things? So there's no consistency in their arguments. But we know if a little person creates a little thing, then a big person will create big things. Just like an ant. The ants are very good engineers. They create very elaborate anthills. So if an ant assumes that the whole world has come about by accident, there can't be any higher power than the anthill, then that's why we say the ants are not very intelligent. So human beings are not very intelligent because they're just like ants. They're building their little hills, but they don't understand who the big builder is. And assuming there is a big builder, then, at least at the stage of karma, people assume when they're performing karmic activities rather than dikarma. Human society is generally at the stage of dikarma. Sinful activity. No recognition that there is any laws behind material nature. Their only attempts of science to find laws is how so they can control the material world better. But the first law is that we're not the controller. That therefore our first law is we're supposed to be dutiful. We're supposed to recognize the controller and act accordingly. That's just common sense. If someone's a guest in your house, and they just assume that now because I'm a guest, therefore I own the house. And they eat out your refrigerator, they sell all your belongings. Princity, and the Das was telling me yesterday that one devotee he adopted. One child whose parents were heroin addicts, and he was a heroin addict from birth. And he grew up, and his habit was whenever he was raised by some other devotees, whenever he would be in their house, he'd steal everything, sell everything, and then use it to buy drugs. So this happened four or five times, and he's still invited back, because these people are very renounced. But it's not very polite to go into someone's house and assume now because I'm in the house, therefore obviously everything here belongs to me, and therefore you sell everything. No, you're the guest in the house. Similarly, we're the guests in this place, and if we find out what the owner wants us to do, then it's proper. And if we assume that there is no owner, you walk into the department store, there's no one helping you, you don't see anyone, maybe a few cameras here and there, you try to avoid the cameras, and you just say, well, no one's here. I went to the cash register, there's no one there, so I just take everything I can and try to avoid the cameras. So that's more or less the material world. We've come here, we've gotten together, we're holding each other's hands, trying to convince each other there is no person here, it's all an accident, we can do whatever we want, there's no life after death, you're not going to get punished, just do whatever you want and everything, you know, and enjoy, so-called enjoy. And if you see a camera here and there, just obey the camera, or just pretend it doesn't exist. Just like the ostrich, when it's attacked by an animal, you know what an ostrich is? This bird with a huge body and little long head, little tiny head, big body. Never heard of an ostrich. So when it's attacked by an animal, it puts its head into the sand. That way its head is protected at least. But that's not very good protection. In America they had this propaganda in the 80s. Well, actually it was in the 60s when I was going, or 50s actually, 50s when I was going to public school. They had this propaganda that at that time the Russians had atomic weapons. They had just gotten the atomic bomb, the hydrogen bomb. And of course, as usual, they just try and put everyone in anxiety and fear. That's how they control the people. And they had a method, they were trying to figure some method to protect people in case an atomic bomb fell on the city. So everyone's in anxiety, so they had to come up with some solution. So their solution is called duck and cover. As soon as you see the light from an atomic bomb or a hydrogen bomb, then you should immediately duck wherever you are. We were being taught to duck underneath our desks at school. As soon as you see the flash from the atomic bomb, then you duck underneath your school bed. And if you can, you try to get a newspaper and cover yourself with it. It's called duck and cover. There are solutions to the problems of an atomic attack. Rather inexpensive solution. But probably would have been rather ineffective. Similarly, their solutions to the problems of material existence are exactly on the same par. They don't know what the real, how to solve the problems of material existence, and they come up with either trying to ignore it, if you see the flash from the atomic bomb, just pray to God that it's not there, and maybe it'll go away. Or then you have some other solution. then you have your medical solution, you have your life insurance solution, you have your hold hand solution, cry together, something like that. Some kind of solution which doesn't really deal with the problem. Just kind of ignores the problem. Therefore, Prabhupada's favorite example was that if you have a boil on your hand or your arm, just trying to blow on it won't do very good, won't do anything. You can blow on it and may seem to go away, but as soon as you stop blowing, then it's still there. So it's still there, however hard you may blow on it. Similarly, unless people recognize that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that he's the owner, and that's only the beginning. That he's the owner means that therefore we have dutiful activities. Dutiful activities means beginning with Vibhana and Ashram. Although they claim that it's a caste system, but actually the Vana and Ashram system is a system by which we recognize the controller of the universe and we perform dutiful activities. And that's called yaga, sacrificial activities. That the rain doesn't come about by accident, nothing comes by accident, therefore we have some duties to the controllers. And if we don't perform those duties, then we'll get into trouble. Because as devotees, we don't care about those things, because we think, well, I'm chanting. Because we know that the sacrifice in this age is chanting Hare Krishna. Therefore we feel safe that at least we're doing our duty by chanting Hare Krishna. But others who don't know why we're chanting, they think that this is simply some brainwashing activity. That actually we're frustrated people, we have immense material desires, and to keep us sedated so we don't get out of hand, they got us chanting, trying to deny the mind, trying to become mindless so we don't listen to our minds anymore. Because we are trying to do it like that. But that's what they think, that the highest benefit of chanting Hare Krishna is you become mindless. And therefore the cult leader can easily influence you to go out and collect for him. Because we're not doing a very good job on that aspect either. But that's their idea. They can't conceive of anything called sacrifice. Because they don't believe in the demigods. They don't believe in God, practically speaking. They think that let us work. And if I appease my boss, or if we can cheat someone, or somehow or another we can exploit material nature, then our life is successful. Etam drishtim avashtavya nashtatmanona buddhaya pravat yugra karmana shaya jagatohita. Following such conclusion, lost to themselves, they're winding up creating horrible, unbeneficial works which are meant to destroy the world. So with this mentality, they just go and exploit it. For instance, a few years ago they had this propaganda, save the, not the whale, not the dolphins, but the penguins. They're always trying to save some animal. Someone has some sentiment towards that. Of course, the same people who are trying to save the animal, they're also pro-abortion. The Christians in America, they're anti-abortion, but they're pro-killing all the animals. And the people who are against killing the animals, they're all pro-abortion. Because they're in ignorance. In any case, they had this very beautiful little baby penguins. Not exactly penguins. Seals. They had very fluffy coats and very soft. And so they were just killing them. Just go up to the seals, hit them on the head. The little baby seal. Smash the brains and skin them alive. And then take their fur. That was just a few years ago. So then there was this propaganda, you know, how can you wear these coats? They're made out of these fluffy little baby seals and how violent it is. And then the only way they could stop it is that people stopped buying the coats. And now, a couple of years later, people forgot the whole thing, so now they're back at it. Smashing little heads of the seals. baby seals, and they can coast at it.
Because people don't mind.
You can kill the seal, you can kill anything, but if you make me feel bad about it, if I feel guilty about it, then I can't enjoy it. But as soon as I forget about it, then it's alright.
Just like in the McDonald's, there is so much propaganda against meat eating in America that is so horrible, killing cows. So they decided, because the children were getting a little, not the parents were so dull, they couldn't care less. But the children felt a little guilty. They weren't properly trained. So in order to increase the sale of the McDonald's hamburgers, they created in front of all McDonald's hamburger places, trees. They put these artificial trees there, and on the trees they hung hamburgers. So when you wanted to get a hamburger, children could go to the tree and pick it off the tree. So that way they thought that the hamburgers grow on trees. So you're not really hurting the animals. And of course, Ronald McDonald, he became a vegetarian, which is quite a scandal. I think he got cancer of the colon or something. He stopped laughing and became a vegetarian. Because people don't know how internal nature is working. And they're trying to create all this art, false understanding, and therefore they don't know that people have a duty. And that duty is ultimately to help perform a sacrifice to get the benedictions from the higher authorities, the demigods. And the higher authorities always look to the lotus feet of Vishnu. That they get their power from Vishnu, from the super soul. Therefore, without the Shudras, the Vaishyas, the Kshatriyas, the Brahmins, then the whole society will wind up eventually in this situation that there will be no more rainfall, there'll be no more fruits, there'll be no more flowers, there'll be only something, people will just be eating each other to stay alive. They'll be conceiving children and just waiting for that day when the child is born, then they can have a feast on the child. So we can just imagine their mentality. But people are progressing towards that mentality. It's all based on lack of understanding of how things go on. And the more one thinks oneself to be independent controller, then naturally one will think oneself to be an independent enjoyer. That if I'm going to have to spend so much time trying to control things, then I should enjoy them too. And then if I want to enjoy with others, if I have a little spark of generosity, then I'm the benefactor. So these are all false conceptions. Neither were the controllers here, neither were the enjoyers, nor were we being controlled by the illusory energy. We're suffering under the control of the material nature, and it's only the material nature that, under Krishna's direction, who's giving anyone anything. Kathira Bhartha Prabhu Shakshi Nivasam Sharanam Sharit Paravas Pralayas Dhanam Nidanam Bhijam Avyam. I am the goal, the sustainer, the master, the witness, and the dearmost friend. Krishna is practically, he's doing everything here. But because people don't recognize that, therefore they are put into illusion. They refuse to recognize that. They think that Krishna, our God, is simply some, whatever we create is our God and worship that. That's good enough for us. If we go to church once a week, and if there's some God, and we pray to him to help our material situation, and if our material situation is good, and we don't need anything more, then we're wasting our time going to God. But here, it says that as things get worse, just like in America, every time there's a crisis, because people are there, they have some sentiment. Every time there's a crisis, or at least beforehand, they used to go to the church and pray. But that may not work out in a long way, because probably gives the example that the Germans during World War II, they went to the, or World War I, they went to the wives of the Germans, the daughters of the Germans, the sisters of the Germans who were fighting, they all went to the church and prayed, "My dear Lord, please save my husband, my daughter, my father." And the French were also going to the church and praying the same thing, the French ladies. But they're in a battle, they're killing each other. Obviously, no one's going to, God can't answer everyone's prayers. So the Germans became atheists, the French became atheists. Because we prayed to God and didn't deliver, so why should we pray to God? It's a waste of time. Because they never consulted God before whether they should have the war or not. They expect we're going to do whatever we want, and then God has to deliver the results that we want. But that's not the way things work. Their conception of God is wrong. And although they're better than the atheists who don't believe at all in God, but because they don't understand God, it is not that because we believe in God, God becomes our order supplier, and he must do whatever we want. It doesn't work out like that, and they're disappointed. And they think if God's not our order supplier, then what is the benefit, what is the use of believing in God? Well, one thing is that the laws of nature are such, is that if one doesn't perform sacrifice, if one doesn't show any gratitude towards the Supreme Person, doesn't follow his directions, then things will degrade and get worse and worse. And until the point where people suffer enough, and the people are a little pious, they'll turn towards God again, they'll become more receptive, they'll try to understand why we're suffering. So in the Torah, it says the human being begins when we inquire, why am I suffering? But because people don't inquire why they're suffering, they think they're enjoying. Therefore they suffer, they put themselves in a situation where they'll suffer more and more until they finally arrive at the question, why am I suffering? And someone, namely the devotees, can come along and explain to them, to those people who are a little pious. But here it says that those who are miscreants, those who are sinful, those who are atheistic, those who are deceitful, those who are foolish, they'll never make that inquiry. They've made a vow to live in the material world and never make that inquiry for as long as possible. They have their own idea why they're suffering. They think because I haven't made enough money, I'm not getting enough sense gratification, therefore I'm suffering. Because I'm not controlling the world enough, I'm suffering. Because I'm suffering for no, there is no cause for my suffering, it's all causes. So those are the demons. They'll never hear, they'll never try to understand even the simplest philosophy from a sura, from a devotee. It doesn't matter how logical or reasoning the devotee gives, they'll never listen to it. Just like I was preaching to some Christians one time about how you're not supposed to eat meat. And they exploded and said, "You're of the devil, your whole reasoning is of the devil, your whole philosophy is of the devil, because only the devil could have created such a sophisticated philosophy, such a clever philosophy." So that's more or less the standard of demoniac. That's their demoniac reason. So, any questions? Thank you.
Somehow reluctant to really accept the philosophy. It's very strange. On one hand, I feel at rest, and I think, oh, maybe I should change something. But somehow it makes me, I feel like completely cut off. And I beg you, please help me. Please include me more in your talk. And then all of a sudden, you're speaking about me again. And we have this mentality also. But somehow, I need to get a more practical application of our philosophy. And to really notice that all these rubbish philosophies, which Prabhupada is attacking in his books, they're out there, but they're, first of all, I really have to find them inside of me. And it makes me feel very, I really want to change something because I know I'm supposed to be a devotee. And then you say, unless the devotees come and help and, you know, give them knowledge, they will be lost, they will become animals again. So I really need training to apply the philosophy myself, to really, you know, to really be a devotee. And I cannot just rely on being in the temple and being called a devotee and thinking that all the demons are out there and I'm safe and I have something to give. So actually I noticed that there's a big need for practical application of our philosophy. So I'm wondering, could you maybe give an example of how in our devotee community, in our devotee life, this mentality of exploiting matter occurs?
Well, for us, we're trying to get some knowledge, some understanding, so we feel a little grateful. Some mood, actually, gratefulness. That material nature dulls us so that we go around thinking it's, you know, more or less, Maya is always chanting, it's all an accident, there is no God. Only when we're in that temple, once in a while we get a little tinge in our heart, a little feeling that maybe there is a God and I'm supposed to have some duty to perform to Him. So we have to recognize it is all Krishna energy. In other words, if we can go and give something practical, everyone has to do this, and they have to do that. And certain activities are more beneficial, preaching especially. Whatever preaching is going on here for the Torah program or whatever else, because therefore there's some central theme of the community here that creates a kind of mission. So there has to be a mission. Otherwise, the mission may be to serve the deities, but we've seen that deity worship in and of itself is not really sufficient to say because we're just too dull to actually be that beautiful. So some other mission other than just doing deity work is necessary. And in this age, the process is preaching, especially. So, how much we preach and how we preach and as a community or individually, that depends on us. Of course, we're preaching is quite simple, that there is a God. And from there you can deduce all the other practical things.
But how can I preach unless somebody really preached to me? I feel like I'm supposed to go out there and preach, but all these things I haven't quite understood myself.
You haven't understood that there's a controller in the universe?
Really, I don't. I go to the prasadam room and I think now I can, especially if nobody's around. You know, you were saying about, we go into a house and we don't see anybody and then we think, wow, it's all for my enjoyment, I can control, I can sell the things. I have the same mentality if I go to prasadam. I don't see it as Krishna's grace, or I don't even consider that there might be somebody else coming after me who wants something also. There is this very, very strong sentence. So I need somebody to preach to me first before I can call myself a big preacher.
No, we don't consider ourselves to be a big preacher. We have to consider ourselves to be an instrument. That's part of our philosophy, that feeling of gratefulness, even if we're so-called preaching, understanding that it's actually our spiritual master and the disciple succession and Krishna who's actually doing the preaching. We're just not getting in the way. We're just, by their inspiration, by their direct influencing us, we may be able to be an instrument for them and therefore repeat what they have to say, and we have to listen also.
Yeah.
So we develop that mood of appreciation. And for those who are
we're preaching to, when we see that they're becoming receptive to what we're saying and following it, then they serve as our teachers so that we can take the words that we're saying more seriously. They become our example. So in that sense, they become our guru.
Yeah, you were speaking about gratitude, and this comes about by giving it to others, then I understand better what I actually have received.
Yeah, when we see how others are following, then we learn how to follow ourselves, how they're putting it into practice.
Anything else?
Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Grantarai Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaura Prabhupada.